WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
With me now are John Kander and Fred Ebb, one of the top songwriting teams in the country. They wrote the scores for the Broadway musicals Cabaret, Flora the Red Menace, Chicago, The Act, Woman of the Year. They've done the scores for several films, including Funny Lady and New York, New York, and their song New York, New York became a smash hit, nearly a national anthem, after it was recorded by Sinatra. Kander and Ebb are in Philadelphia for the opening of Zorba, the musical, tonight at the Forest Theater. They wrote the score for this show. The production of Zorba will reunite three people from the film Zorba the Greek: Anthony Quinn, who played Zorba, Lila Kudrova, who played Bubulina, and the director, Michael Kakrianis. John Kander, by the way, is the lyricist, is the composer, and Fred Ebb is the lyricist. I knew that.
We're interchangeable.
Welcome, both of you. Let me ask you the question that I'm sure you've been asked dozens of times. How did you get together?
Our publisher, Tommy Volando, really literally introduced us. We were both signed to him, and he literally said, I think you guys should meet each other. I think you'd like each other. And he did, and we did, and that was 22 years ago.
Is it like when you start a relationship with someone that you can tell it's going to work?
Well, yeah, it's a little bit like a courtship, I guess. You know, you meet someone and you date for a while, and then you decide you're serious. And I think, if I were to make an analogy, it would be that. We met and liked each other, and then we started to fool around writing some songs. And within a week, we'd written a song we got very lucky with called My Coloring Book. And then it seemed as if we were meant for each other, you know.
When did you know you wanted to be a lyricist? Did you write songs for high school productions or college plays,
no,
anything like that?
I did not. I knew I wanted to be one. My problem was I had no idea how you go about that. You know, like, you're not, if you don't do both, you know, like Cole Porter, for example, or Irving Berlin, then your writing depends on finding somebody with whom to write. So I always wanted to do that, but I never knew quite how. Then I met a girl who knew a composer, and I started to write with him. He literally taught me sort of the craft, the form. His name was Phil Springer. And then he went off and left me, and then there was another fellow, and he went off and got married and left me. And at that time, I was signed to Tommy Volando, who, as John said, introduced me to him.
John Kander, what did you want to write for the musical stage?
Why?
Yeah.
I never thought about why. I just never thought about not doing it.
Uh-huh.
I've been some sort of musician all my life, and always writing. And I guess I just never thought I would do anything else.
I'd like to talk about some of the musicals that you've collaborated on.
Okay.
Let's start with Cabaret. When were you introduced to the idea of it? What point did you enter?
We had a show called Flora the Red Menace with Liza Minnelli that was produced by Hal Prince. And we were out of town. We might have even been here. Were we here?
We were in Boston.
I'm
not sure now, come to think of it.
I'm not either. But wherever Flora the Red Menace was, Hal, one day during rehearsal, took us to the back of the theater, and he said, no matter what happens to Flora, whether it's a hit or a miss or anything, would you guys write a musical version of I Am a Camera for me, which I will direct? I thought it was a terrible idea, really, but it was Hal, and I mostly on faith, of his extraordinary judgment, we said sure, and that's exactly what happened. Flora opened, and the very next morning we went to our first meeting on Cabaret.
That was therapy too, because Flora was not a success, and the fact that we immediately had something to go to was terrific.
It was extraordinary of Hal, to have faith in us to that extent.
Did you do anything to steep yourself in the music or style of that period in Germany to get in the mood for the composing you'd need to do?
Yes, I listened to lots and lots of German jazz of the 20s. And then I put it all aside and forgot about it and just let whatever had soaked in come out.
What were you told about the mood in the story?
No, well, at that point, we didn't even have the character, the MC, which I think eventually became one of the most arresting and novel things about the musical. I was told to read I'm a Camera, which I did, and lots of other, you know, work of that period, German work. I looked at all of the German expressionist art, and what was happening there was an enormous cultural revolution in Berlin, which affected a great many worlds, including the art world. And
so you had read the lyrics before you'd seen the script?
We were doing it sort of concurrently. There was an outline, and with our collaborator, who was Joe Masteroff, and under the guidance of Hal, we put it together piece by piece.
Hal tends to work that way anyway, which is, I think, probably the best way. A show is built with all the collaborators from the ground up.
Well, let's listen to Mein Herr from the soundtrack of the film Cabaret. Maybe you could tell us how this song came into shape.
That was not from the musical. This is only from the movie.
From the movie, yeah.
Yeah.
This was a song that Bob Fosse asked us to write to replace what?
Don't Tell Mama.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember why.
I think he wanted a sexier opening number. The character of Sally was somewhat, she was more important in the film than she ever had been in the play. In the play, in fact, she has 2.5 songs. In the film, she became more important, and he wanted the opening number to be more vibrant. And Don't Tell Mama is sort of a sweet ditty-like song.
And it also had a chorus in it, and maybe I think he wanted something.
He wanted something for Liza to sing by herself, although there's a chorus in Mein Herr, too. I think he wanted it more thumping and arresting and the dynamic. Don't Tell Mama is a rather soft little 30s-like song.
And when you know you're writing for Liza Minnelli, is there a certain range you have in mind?
Yeah, I think it's easier. Whenever you know who you're writing for, you get a sound in your head, and somehow instinctively you begin to tailor it for that person. But I remember with Mein Herr, as a matter of fact, I was so scared when we were playing it.
We also had written conservatively 8 songs before that one, before Bobby Fosse approved of of Mein Herr. He knew exactly what he was looking for, and we weren't coming up with it.
Did you resent it when he turned the others down?
Oh, no. That's part of...
No, we write fast, and we throw away fast.
But it's also part of it. It's part of part of what you do.
But I remember when we played it, I was so anxious for him. There are a lot of glissandos in it. We were playing in Cy Feuer's office, and I remember at the end of playing Mein Herr for him the first time, I looked down, and there was blood on the piano keys, literally from going swish with my fingers. But I took the song.
Yeah, he said that'll do nicely, and there was great sigh of relief that we wouldn't have to go home and try still another one.
Well, let's hear it. This is Joel Grey and Liza Minnelli.
Meine Damen und Herren, Mesdames et Messieurs, Ladies und Gentlemen, I give you that international sensation, Fräulein Sally Bowles!
You have to understand the way I am, Mein Herr. A tiger is a tiger, not a lamb, Mein Herr. You'll never turn the vinegar to jam, Mein Herr. So I do what I do. When I'm through, then I'm through, and I'm through. Toodaloo. Bye, bye. My liebe Herr, farewell, my liebe Herr. It was a fine affair, but now it's over. And though I used to care, I need the open air. You're better off without me, Mein Herr. Don't dab your eye, Mein Herr, or wonder why, Mein Herr. I've always said that I was a rover. You mustn't knit your brow, you should have known by now. You've every cause to doubt me, Mein Herr. The
continent of Europe is so wide, mein Herr. Not only up and down, but side to side, mein Herr. I couldn't ever cross it if I'd tried, mein Herr. But I do what I can, inch by inch, step by step, mile by mile, man by man. Bye, mein lieber Herr. Farewell, mein lieber Herr. It was a fine affair, but now it's over. And though I used to care, I need the open air. You're better off without me, mein Herr. Don't dab your eye, mein Herr. Oh, wonder why, mein Herr. I've always said that I was a rover. You mustn't knit your brow. You should have known by now. You'd every cause to doubt me, mein Herr. Bye-bye, mein lieber Herr. Auf Wiedersehen, mein Herr. Es war sehr gut, mein Herr. Und vorbei.
Du kennst mich wohl,
mein Herr. Ach, lebe wohl, mein Herr. Du sollst mich nie mehr sehen, mein Herr. Bye-bye, mein lieber Herr. Bye-bye, mein lieber Herr. Farewell, mein lieber Herr. It was a fine affair, but now it's over. And though I used to care, I need the open air. You're better off without me. You're better without me.
Wiedersehen, es war sehr gut.
Mein
Herr.
From Cabaret, that was Mein Herr, sung by Liza Minnelli, and my guests are John Kander and Fred Ebb, who wrote the score for Cabaret and for many other musicals on Broadway and movies. And they wrote the score for Zorba, which will be opening tonight at the Forest Theater in Philadelphia. Musicals, the scores that you write for a musical get a new life when the musical closes, and then you see which songs can continue to live and what kind of context they're sung in. What do you think of the way the songs from Cabaret have been handled outside of the film and stage production?
Have been handled?
Yeah, well, the kind of life they've taken on their own, the songs that are still
sung. Oh, well,
sung
that's, you know, that's always very gratifying. I think there's no real way of knowing while you're writing them. I think it's a mistake to sit down and think of a song you're writing for musical in terms of the life it might have away from the musical.
Yeah, we can never guess that.
But only because you really, truly never know.
But do you sit down and say, well, this will be the showstopper, this will be
never.
The
no.
hit that's
never.
In there?
No.
I
wish we could.
A very serious mistake.
Why?
Because I don't think you really ever know. And the songs you're surest of are the ones you might be taking out after the first preview.
I wish there was some way that you could look at a song and say, boy, is that going to be a smash?
Some songs seem to have more of a independent life, I mean, to you. But I don't think that's a motivating thing. It's a serious, you know, problem if you make that what motivates you.
Well, take a song like Mein Herr. You can't see Frank Sinatra singing it on his variety special. It just wouldn't work. Do you keep in mind, like, which songs would be flexible enough for a wide range of performers?
I think we tend to really write, focus totally on the project that we're doing. And then, if you're lucky, something gets pulled from it.
Cabaret, for example, was not written with an eye to how many people could possibly sing it outside the show.
Right.
And when that does happen, it's very gratifying and very nice, but always slightly surprising.
One of the really curious things about the film New York, New York, for which you wrote the score and the title song, is that when the movie came out, well, I heard Liza Minnelli singing it on the radio a couple of times. But it wasn't until a couple of years later when Frank Sinatra recorded his version of it that it really became like a national anthem.
Well,
never
as
understood
Zorba
that,
would
though.
Say, that's one of the wonders and glories of life. You really do never know. And it was 3 years after the film. It was, if we thought of it, which we hadn't, we would have thought that the song was a dead issue. And then suddenly, you know, it's this wonderful break you get when somebody sings it who, you know, people like very much. And
I don't know, for instance, what made that version work and Liza's not so popular. It's a.
I wouldn't know that either. I also don't know why Frank Sinatra decided to sing it.
What do you think of his version of it?
His? I like all versions of it. I think it's just a wonderful thing to hear people sing, you know, your work. It's
in the film, the premise of that song is that it's written by a jazz musician,
right,
and then sung by his wife, who's a pop singer. And you hear several different versions of the song, the kind of jazz version.
She wrote the words.
And she wrote the words, right. So you've got the jazz version and the pop version, which is a really interesting conflict of two different musical worlds that are set up. Did you have to keep in mind writing a song that would have the flexibility to be performed in both
settings?
I don't
know. That would have been John's problem if it existed.
Well, you could take almost anything and make it into a sort of jazz version. The interesting thing about that is that We wrote a song first called New York, New York, and it was De Niro, I think, who reacted in a way that he thought that song was not heavy enough to carry the weight that would have to in the movie, and so we went home and wrote another one, which was this.
So what was the first one, though?
I can't remember it. We both tried.
So obviously he was right.
I remember the incident very well. We had two songs we showed that day. One was In the World Goes Round, and that first version of New York, New York. And everybody loved The World Goes Round. And then when we played the New York, New York song, it clearly they didn't think it was as strong as the other one. But the title song is where they felt the real, you know, push sure to be. And so we went home to redo it. Seems to me we do that a lot.
Yep.
Was it suggested to you that you write a song that would
be sung
weightier, like an anthem?
No.
Did you
no.
have that in mind?
Just
no.
that something that which had a little more weight to it.
And would be powerful for Liza to sing. Because in the movie, how it is done is she is performing at the Waldorf Astoria, and it's clearly her closing number. So it should be a song that would merit being a closing number. It was that sort of thing.
I think we've all heard at least 200 different versions of New York, New York. I've heard it in elevators. I've heard street musicians performing it in Manhattan. Lots of, you know, performers included as part of their performance.
That's terrific. It makes me very happy.
What's the worst version of it you've ever heard?
On the Miss America pageant.
I knew it. I knew you were going to say that. Some poor girl is going to be really miserable now.
Well, I don't mean to offend you, Miss Alabama or whoever you were, but that was really rank.
How do you feel when you're sitting in an elevator or in a restaurant and it comes on the music?
I think I'm going to die. I really think literally if you're in an airplane or in an elevator or something like that and your own music comes on, and particularly if you're alone, you think, that's it, curtains.
Or if the elevator is going up, you think you're going to heaven. I like that. Sometimes you don't even connect it. You know, you listen to quite a lot of the song before you say, "Oh, I wrote that." You know, you don't connect yourself to
it. I like it in supermarkets, though.
If you ever elbowed someone next to you and say, "Oh, by the way, I wrote that song."
No.
I have.
No. You have?
Yeah, there was a cab driver once. I couldn't control it. Then I felt embarrassed. But I heard it on the radio in a cab. And in fact, they'd played a few of our songs, one after the other. It sounded like they were doing a piece about us. And I got real excited. And I said to him, you know, I wrote that song.
Oh, and he said?
Well, he's a typical New York cab, right? Like, sure you did, you know. But I was real excited then. It was the only time I've ever done that.
I guess what can you do to prove it to the cabbie?
Nothing. I could hum a few bars of it.
But you're disappointed that The World Goes Round wasn't a hit?
Yes, I was. I mean, I like that song a lot.
Tell me how you came up with the line, "Those vagabond shoes are yearning to stray."
Oh, I never know how you come up with anything. Writing's sort of mysterious, I think. You just, it's just there sometime.
Let me reintroduce you before we continue. My guests are John Kander and Fred Ebb, the composer and lyricist of many Broadway and film hits. And they just wrote, they wrote the score for Zorba and added several new scores, songs to it. And we'll be talking about Zorba in a few minutes. That opens tonight at the Forest Theater in Philadelphia with Anthony Quinn. Now, they wrote the score for Woman of the Year, which has been a great success on Broadway. It's first starred Lauren Bacall, then Raquel Welch, and Debbie Reynolds is scheduled to open in it shortly. Let's listen to one of the songs from this. It's a really great score, and
thank you.
I'd like to play a selection from it. Maybe you could just tell us a little bit about writing the score for it. You probably had Lauren Bacall in mind when you were doing it, and she's not known as a as a singer. What did you have to think about when you were writing for her?
It's funny, you don't really think of elements. You just put her voice in your brain, and it seems sometimes it works out that you capture what's best for her.
I don't know.
You don't want
a limited range, for example, so you can't write for Lauren Bacall the way you would write for Liza, for example, who could, you know, push two octaves or something.
She'd be the first person to tell you that.
But, there's a limitation on you. But I think if you work within it, you know, then it should come out all right.
Also, Bacall's very musical. So what she may lack in actual vocal range, she makes up in a sort of musical sense about what she's doing.
We're going to hear I Wrote the Book, which has a very clever lyric to it. Do you want to say anything about what was going through your
about
mind?
About my cleverness? Sure. No, that was a song added out of town. We were, what city, where was that?
Boston.
With Woman of the Year, and we didn't have an opening for the second act. And we were asked to come up with a song, and I Wrote the Book was it.
We had three songs in that place, didn't we?
Well, there were ballads. We had originally conceived of the opening of the second act with a ballad. And the ballad in that particular show was the least appealing thing to an audience because it's a fast, funny, up show, hopefully. And that's certainly how we thought of it in Boston. So a ballad didn't seem right. We wanted a rhythm song. And Bacall has an easier time with rhythm songs. And that was really the motivating thing.
Okay, well, let's hear it. This is I Wrote the Book, sung by Lauren Bacall, with lyrics by Fred Ebb, music by John Kander.
To name me Woman of the Year wasn't what you'd call a fluke. I understand I won it in a breeze. So the ladies should be thrilled, their expectations are fulfilled, as I'm broadening my field of expertise. I wrote the book on how to be cool. I wrote the book on how to be strong. I wrote the book on how to interpret the news and never be wrong. I wrote the book on how to be tough. I wrote the book on how to be terse. I wrote the book on every subtextual phrase in Eliot's verse. I wrote the book on how to have class. I wrote the book on how to have clout. I wrote the book on reading government pamphlets and doping them out. So when it comes to losing a man, you'll find it unsurprisingly true. But last week, I wrote that book too. And art. I wrote the book on how to have style. I wrote the book on wisdom and wit. I wrote the book on every great English statesman from Cromwell to Pitt. So when it comes to losing a man, you'll find it unsurprisingly true that last week I wrote that book. So when it comes to losing a man, it should be unsurprising to you to note that I wrote that book.
Lauren Bacall from Woman of the Year with a score by John Kander and Fred Ebb. And they're both in Philadelphia for the opening this evening of Zorba, the musical for which they wrote the score, and that opens tonight starring Anthony Quinn. Do you ever cut demo records when a show is about to open to give an example to the cast of
always,
how it's supposed to
be?
You really do?
Yeah, every we show have one on every show.
So you sing and you're at the piano?
Mm-hmm.
Do you like doing it?
Just enjoy. Yeah, I enjoy that.
It's nice to have a record of what your original intentions were.
And it's also fun to look back at it years later and see how many things you've cut and how the songs that didn't stay that you went into rehearsal with. And
you know, Ira Gershwin and Harold Arlen and several others have like demo discs that they did for plays that have been issued since on record. Would you like that to happen at some point?
Not especially, no.
I saw you perform on, I guess, with the Grammy Awards, and I thought that was enormous fun. You did.
Fred's a terrific performer. He really is.
I like doing it better than John does. He panics on me and won't do half of them. So, but I enjoy it. I think part of it is no one expects you to, you know, be any good. So if you're singing and you have some gusto and stuff, I think the shock of it makes them kind of like you better.
I find sometimes with pop songs that I need to hear it a couple of times before I really get it. And like after two or three times, it's this way with a lot of rock and roll also, I think. After two or three times you really get it and then you really crave it and you want to hear more. When you're sitting through a Broadway show, I think the song probably really has to grab you that first time around, because except for the reprise at the end, there isn't going to be a repeat of it. Do you have to take that into consideration?
Yes, I think you have to arrange the music in such a way so that it's so that reaction is immediate, response is immediate, so that you can really hear the lyric clearly that first and only time around.
I always thought that was rather unfair in terms of critics judging a score based on a first hearing, because that's the only one they get, and then their review appears. And I think sometimes they might, you know, slough a score off that if they had really spent some time with it, they might have appreciated more.
Well, with a cast album, you get to really listen to something over and over. Are you usually present when the cast recording
is
made?
Oh, yes.
That's
a hard day.
Is that heartache time?
Well, it's just hard.
You've already got your review, too. I mean, so.
I always hear stories, though, that the lead singer ends up with a sore throat, but the studio time is booked and there's nothing you
can
do.
It's a lot
about
of that.
It.
And it's a very tense and very long day. And everybody's in a recording studio, even if you've done something over and over and over again on the stage, suddenly there's that one take and it's going to be preserved, and everybody becomes very aware of it, and people do get colds.
Which is the best and worst, do you think, of the cast albums of your scores?
Well, with the exception of Flora the Red Menace, which I don't think is a very good cast album, I've liked them all, and I'm grateful for them because it's a permanent record of your work, which you wouldn't have ordinarily.
How did you feel in the 60s when, after Hair, rock music started entering into Broadway? How did you think that was going to affect your future and the future of Broadway
musicals?
I
kept reading that it was going to affect the entire theater, you know, that now rock musicals were going to be it, and that never happened. I think you have to do, you know, to paraphrase another show, your own thing. And I don't think you can become, I'd rather be the first person to have done something rather than the imitator based on someone else's success.
What did happen, though, with, I think, when rock came into the theater, or rock came in to being period, is that popular music, which used to be in great part taken from musical comedy in Broadway, drifted away from that, and now it's very difficult to get a song from a musical recorded individually. So the hits that have come from musicals recently are really a handful, because the rock pop world has gone in a totally other direction.
Do nightclub performers and popular singers still look to Broadway for songs to add to their repertoire?
Yes, I think they do.
Which ones do you like to most have perform your songs?
Liza is my favorite.
Uh-huh. What about Sinatra? Now, he did New York, New York. Do you like the way he sings? For some composers, I think the
Well, he never sang anything else we wrote. He sings maybe this time, I think.
That's right.
And I'd be delighted to have him sing anything he'd like. But Liza, consistently sings our work.
Also, you know with Liza that you're going to get a real representation of what your intention was.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever use a thesaurus or a book of rhymes?
Yeah,
like that?
I do.
He's got a black, beaten-up rhyming dictionary.
I do.
Any other tools that you have?
No. Just my head. I always think, too, that I'm not going to find it in that little black book. But you go. I think if you can't really think of it, it probably
isn't. Actually, you rarely do.
I don't go to it a lot.
What, are there words that are really hard to rhyme that you have to stay away from?
Sure. Orange. I don't know how to rhyme that. And sometimes you paint yourself into a corner. You've set up a rhyme for a word. And then when you get to where it's supposed to rhyme, you can't find what you're looking for, so you have to rewrite the first line.
John Kander,
did that make any sense at all?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
John Kander, has he ever asked you to change a line because there was a lyric that he really wanted to get in that wasn't going to fit with the line the way you wrote it?
Yes.
Well, we don't really work that separately, though. I mean, it isn't as if he writes a lyric and then I go in and set it. We really work in the same room all the time, so that... Yes, we give and take a lot in that way.
The most I would say is, do you think that we could say all of this and still have a tune? It's very important that John is proud of what he does. If I were to force him or exert pressure on him to rewrite a line and it would come out not quite as satisfactorily for him as the first one, I would rather he had the first one.
If you had to choose between Rodgers and Hammerstein or Rodgers and Hart for your listening, which would you take?
Ooh, that's hard because they're like two different experiences.
A little bit of this, a little bit of that.
No, you have to choose.
I don't want to.
I don't either.
No, I couldn't answer that. Rodgers and Hammerstein, certainly, if you were in a rather... more romantic, emotional mood, and Rodgers and Hart if you were happening to feel a little more sophisticated that day.
No one ever says like Hart and Rodgers or Hammerstein and Rodgers. Did anyone ever try like Ebb and Kander before it became Kander and Ebb?
It happens even now. People say that. We just thought Kander and Ebb sounded better.
We answered anything.
Just say, Fred, I'll come.
You wrote the score for Zorba, which is opening in Philadelphia tonight. Would you tell us what the first part of the history of that musical was in the 60s when you first wrote the score?
Well, we were in California. We were in Los Angeles with a show called The Happy Time. And Hal Prince called us on the telephone, literally, and asked us if we would do this project. Asked us to read the book and then to discuss it with him. And... again, as happens often, we read it and couldn't figure out how it could work as a musical. And when we talked to him after he described his whole concept to us in about 15 minutes, we said, yes, pronto. So Zorba really very much stemmed from his vision of it.
Did you have to listen to a lot of Greek music to figure out how to work?
I did the same thing as with Cabaret. You just listen to lots and lots of Greek folk music and then forget it. And somehow or other, it begins to affect your musical language.
Did the lyrics present any unique problems?
No, I don't employ Greek dialects or anything, really. And I felt emotions, particularly the emotions in Zorba, which are very large and upfront, would probably be universal.
This play ran first in 1968?
I think that's right, yeah.
And I think you told me it played for about a year on Broadway.
It's
now,
about a year, yeah.
Now it's being revived, but with changes. How much of the score is the same?
The most of the score is the same. We've added a song for Zorba in the second act called Woman, and a great deal of the dance music is new, written by, arranged rather, by Tom Fay, and quite excitingly, too. And
the Mind Song.
There's a song for the chorus which is new, and a lot of transitional stuff that is new because the whole concept, physical concept of the show has changed.
Do you like seeing a score like this revived?
Yes, I like. I always like a second chance. I mean, I like. Also, I think in 15 years, which is frightening to say, there's an enormous amount of people who have never been exposed to it. So I like the idea of having them listen to it.
This score means a great deal to me.
It was personally a very happy experience, the show, the first time around, and has been this time too. But I mean, we had a very good and relatively easy time with Zorba because it stayed pretty much the same from out of town to New York. It wasn't a show that underwent enormous changes and rewrites, and I think we rewrote once. So it was a very happy experience, and the show is a happy memory to us. And in many ways, you're reliving that happy memory. So it's a very up experience.
For me, it's the favorite. It's my favorite score that we've written. I don't know if that's true for Freddie, but has always had a very special place for me.
What makes it that special for you?
I think because it's so
romantic.
Passionate.
That he likes that.
And you?
I like it. I don't. It's for the same reason I wouldn't choose between Rodgers and Hart and Rodgers and Hammerstein. I think that each show, you know, is a different sort of experience. I think if I were home alone and had only one of our records to play, I'd probably play Zorba.
Tonight's opening night. What do you do on opening night?
Pace.
Well, usually, if we were in New York and it was opening night, Fred would stay home.
I wouldn't be there.
And I would be there, but I would have turned to stone so that I can't feel anything. Fred's coming tonight, though.
I come out of town, oddly enough. I don't know why that is.
Don't the successes that you've had, though, accumulate anything so that you could be...
Like confidence?
Like confidence.
No.
Not a jinx.
In a word, no.
Joe Stein, who wrote the book for this, I think is fairly...
Yeah, he's calm.
He seems to
seemingly
be
calm.
Relaxed,
I mean, he
it.
Doesn't seem... I think maybe we're just insecure, nervous people anyway.
Well, good luck with it. I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you very much.
And I really enjoyed meeting you. Let me ask you one thing. Does it ever bother you when someone says, which one of you writes the lyrics? Which are you?
No.
Because that happens in teams.
The one question that beginning to bother me is which comes first, the music or the lyric, since everybody asks that. You very nicely did not, and so I thank you.
I thank you very much for talking with us. I really enjoyed
it. Well, thank you for having us.
Love your music, and good luck with Zorba.
Thanks for inviting
us.
Thank you.
John Kander and Fred Ebb have been my guests. John Kander writes the music, Fred Ebb the lyrics, and they wrote the score for Zorba, which opens tonight in Philadelphia at the Forest Theater. It stars Anthony Quinn. And they also wrote the scores for Cabaret, New York, New York, Flora the Red Menace, Woman of the Year, and many others as well. Let's listen to another selection from the score of Woman of the Year, which starred Lauren Bacall, then had Raquel Welch, and which will soon have Debbie Reynolds.
Sam, of course we understand. Who wants to play poker after only 1 month of marriage? You're the luckiest slob on earth, Sam. Goodbye. I've never heard him sound happier. And you know what that means.
It isn't working, it isn't working. I hate to tell you, it isn't working. I knew the minute I got the call that it isn't working at all.